All right, let's begin. So, Shabbat Kuf Mem Gimel Amud Aleph. Of course, follows Shabbat Kuf Mem Bet Amud Bet, which actually is really important for us, but we're not going to be doing it because we don't have time for all of that. But those of you who learned Daf Yom, you should be familiar with it enough to cause me problems as we go through the Daf. So, Kuf Mem Gimel Amud Bet, we're just going to be doing the Mishnah and the Gemara that ends the Perek. We are in Perek 21, Kaf Aleph of Shabbos. And here we are, Matnitin. The Mishnah says as follows: Beit Shammai Omrim Ma'avirin Me'al HaShulchan Atamot Uklipin Ubeit Hillel Omrim Misalek Et HaTavla Kula U'Menara. So we're talking about basically clearing the table at the end. We're talking about leftovers on the table. So the leftovers that they used to have on the table would be basically bones from chicken or from whatever, from meat, and leftover shells from nuts. That's atzamot and klipin. So what do you do with all that stuff? So the issue over here, of course, what's the issue? Why is there a question of what you can do with it?
It's muktzah.
Yeah, it's muktzah. What can you do with it? So the Mishnah says that there's a machloket Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel over here. Beit Shammai actually say that you're just allowed to take it off. You can pick it up. Rashi says, Ma'avirin bi'adayim me'al ha'shulchan. You can pick up all of the bones and all of the shells and just throw them in the garbage. And Beit Hillel says, no, you can't do that. What do you have to do? Misalek ha'tavla kula u'minara. You have to pick up the table itself. It could be that they had smaller tables at the time, but you pick up the table, you bring it over to the garbage can, and you tilt it over, or you tilt it over onto the ground, whatever it is that they used to do back then. You'll tilt it over, but you cannot physically pick up the leftover food after it's been after you know the main food has been eaten. It's mukta. That's Beit Hillel. Surprising that Beit Hillel is essentially more machmir than Beit Shammai, but spoiler alert, that's not going to last for very long. Now the Gemara continues and it says, Ma'avirin milifnei ha'shulchan, this is stama. This is no, the Gemara doesn't quote anybody saying it, and the Mishnah doesn't quote anybody saying it, and the Gemara is going to have to figure out who says it. But Ma'avirin milifnei ha'shulchan perurin pachot mikazayit, v'se'ar shalafunin v'se'ar adashim ibnei shehu machal behema. You are allowed to pick up pieces of bread that are smaller, or pieces of anything, crumbs that are smaller than a kazayit. You can pick those up with your hands and you can throw them away if you want. You don't have to worry about mukta. And you're also allowed to throw away the shells of se'ar shel afunin and se'ar shel adashim, which is pea pods and lentil pods, those kind of leftover things. They're very small. You're allowed to just throw them away because ultimately they get fed to animals. In other words, they're not mukta. These things are not actually mukta. And so you can pick them up. Rashi says, Rashi says, if they're smaller than a gazayit, you can pick them up. And for sure, pieces of bread that are larger than a gazayit, you can definitely pick that up, because that's actually food. But things that are small, that can be fed to animals, that also you're allowed to pick up and throw it onto the ground and feed it to the animals. This is a chiddush, because this is stuff that is not fit for human consumption. It's only fit for animal consumption, but you're allowed to pick it up with your hands and you're allowed to throw it away. Okay. Now the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, well, once we're talking about clearing the table, let's finish the job. Sfog, a sponge, im yeshlo or beit achiza mekanchin bo, v'im lav ein mekanchin bo. If you have a sponge, you're allowed to use it to clear the table. However, that's provided that it has a handle. If it has a handle, you're allowed to use it to clear the table. But if it doesn't have a handle, then you're not allowed to use it to clear the table. What's the problem if it doesn't have a handle? What's the problem over here? Schita. That's right. I can see your motions. Everybody's doing the same motion. Sochet. The problem is that the sponge is going to get, liquid is going to be squeezed out of it, and that's a problem. But somehow, miraculously, if you use a handle on the spoon, on the sponge, then it's going to be okay. Now over here, in parentheses,
still schita. Say it's again? Still schita, it's just a psik reisha schita.
Well, that's a machlokas, as we're going to see, but somehow or another, with the handle, there's no problem. In the parentheses, it says, v'chachamim amrim ben kach u ben kach. There's a machlokas, huge machlokas over here, whether or not this is supposed to be in the Gemara. Let's leave it out for now. Ben kach u ben kach nital b'shabbat. The sponge itself, even if it doesn't have a handle, you are allowed to pick it up. Now, what's the issue over here? Why would you not be allowed to pick up the sponge? Good. So it's mukta. Now, what's interesting over here is that Rashi says keshehu naguv. You are allowed to pick it up when it is wet. Why would you be picking it up? You'd be picking it up because you don't want it on the table anymore. You want it somewhere else. You want the spot. But Rashi actually says that it has to be at least naguv. It's not naguv. It's not anything. It's not ravi to anything. But then he continues and says, ve'inu mekabel tum'ah. The Mishnah says, but it's not mekabel tum'ah. Even though it's enough of a kli that you're allowed to move it on Shabbat, it's not mekabel tum'ah. De'inu lo kli eitz v'lo beged v'lo sak v'lo matechet. It's not enough of a kli to be mekabel tum'ah. Okay. That is our Mishnah. Any comments about the Mishnah? The Gemara is going to make a lot of comments about the Mishnah, so we could save it. But any comments about the Mishnah itself? Before we continue? Okay, we can make one small point about the nature of these atzamot, these bones and klipin. Rashi says, atzamot kashin, she'inan ruin lekelev. What's Rashi assuming over here?
If it was ra'i for a kelev, it wouldn't be mukta.
Right. If it was ra'i for a kelev, then maybe you would be allowed, even according to Beit Hillel, you'd be allowed to remove it from the table directly. But Tosfot argues, Tosfot says, no, not true. Lo pirish ha-kuntrus, lo kipirish ha-kuntrus, the pirish ha-filu kashin, ve'en ruin l'achil ha-klavim. Dehaitan amrinah b'gemara, deka Rabbi Shimon sverolei. Because we don't need to say that, because this is Rabbi Shimon, as we're going to see. Rabbi Shimon says that it has to be l'chol ha-pachot, v'yod l'machal behema. Rabbi Shimon says that as long as it's machal behema, it's going to be fine. So this is not going to jive. We want Beit Hillel to be much more machmir than Rabbi Shimon. We're going to get into that in the Gemara. You guys, I'm sure, are familiar with it, but we're going to see it much more clearly. Okay, so let's see the Gemara. So the Gemara says, first line in the Gemara, you know, breaks the mystery at the beginning of the Mishnah. Amar of Nachman, Anu Ein Lanu Ela Beit Shammai, Kerbi Huda, O Beit Hillel, Kerbi Shimon. What does the first line of the Gemara do to the Mishnah? Rabbi, what does it do?
Flips Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel.
Yeah, it reverses Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai is really the Machmir. Beit Shammai says that there's a problem with Muktzah here, that you're not allowed to pick it up. You have to actually pick up the table and tilt it. And Beit Hillel is the one who says that you're actually allowed to pick up the Muktzah by itself. Rashi comments and says, Ein anu somchal mishnatenu kamut shehishnuya, ala muklefet shitatam, Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai ki Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, fine. Are there any proofs for why the Gemara says this? Is it Stam just saying, no, we happen to know that Beit Hillel holds like Beit Sham, Beit Hillel like Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, and Beit Shammai holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Simon, tell us, what does the Gemara mean when it says that he holds like Rabbi Yehuda or like Rabbi Shimon? What's that talking about?
I'm not sure. It could be with a Gabay Psikresha, could be Dovash, like Malacha Shemit Sikhala Gufa, I'm not sure.
Well, that doesn't make any sense. It wouldn't have anything to do with Sikresha or Vilashis or Hufa. Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda argue about something else. You mentioned it before.
Mukta.
What do they argue about with regard to Mukta?
Rabbi Shimon holds that almost everything is not Mukta.
That's right. Rabbi Shimon holds that there is, he's much more makel on almost all aspects of Mukta. He does have some things that are Mukta, but he's makel on almost all aspects of Mukta. There's one in particular that over here that matters, which is, what happens if you have an object which at the onset of Shabbos was only ra'ui for a human? And then over the course, it becomes not ra'ui for a human, but it's still ra'ui for a behema. So in that case, Rabbi Huda says, if it wasn't ra'ui for a behema at the beginning of Shabbos, then it's mukta, once it's no longer ra'ui for a human. But Rabbi Shimon says, no, it's okay. As long as it now becomes ra'ui for a behema, it's allowed to be used. It's not mukta anymore. So over here, where you have these bones of an animal, bones of a chicken, so it's true that at the beginning of Shabbos, the chicken was really for a human. It was set aside for a human. But nevertheless, if on Shabbos it's no longer fit for human consumption, but it's still fit for animal consumption, it remains non-mukta. That's Rabbi Shimon's position over here that we're interested in. Now, why does the Gemara switch all of a sudden Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon with Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai? How does it know to do that? How does Rav Nachman know to do that?
Because generally Beit Hillel goes like Rabbi Shimon, and generally Beit Shammai goes like Rabbi Shimon. Generally Rabbi Beit Hillel goes like Rabbi Shimon, and generally Beit Shammai goes like Rabbi Yehuda with regards to Muktzah.
How do we know that, though? Do we know that in general?
No.
There's another brighter. A bit weird, but there's another brighter with a lineup.
So, Rabbi, you're saying that Beit Shammai goes according to Rabbi Yehuda?
They're both more machmir when it comes to Muktzah. But Shammai generally is more machmir, except for a few cases which are quoted.
I think anybody reading this Gemara kind of just nods their head and says, yeah, that makes sense. Beit Shammai is machmir like Rabbi Yehuda, Beit Hillel is mekel like Rabbi Shimon. Right?
Lots of things like Rabbi Yehuda on Shabbos.
That's true. Sometimes Beit Shammai is mekel, and sometimes Beit Hillel is machmir, right? So take a look at Tosos. Anu ein lanu ela Beit Shammai ke Rabbi Yehuda. So Tosos says, in particular, the Masechet Ediot, who knows, where does Masechet Ediot come from? How do we have Masechet Ediot? And what is it?
It's all the Edut that they gave when they left, when they were in Yavne, and they had it write it all down before they forgot it.
No, you were very close. It's based on the Gemara and Brachot. Remember when they deposed Rabban Gamliel because he kept messing with Rabbi Yoshua? So on the day that they appointed Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah as the Nasi, so it says that they had to bring in, he opened the doors because Rabban Gamliel had closed the doors to Amei Aratzim, to people who were not Tohu Devaro, and they opened the doors and let everybody in. And it says on that day, everybody came in and they told over all of the halachos that they had a Mesorah about. And that was the day that they wrote Masechet Ediot, which according to the Gemara is the favorite Masechta of the rabbis in Shas. So that's where it was written. So it's like a hodgepodge of different halachot. And over there, we actually have a list. Masechet Ediot actually has a list of all the kulas of Beit Shammai and the chumras of Beit Hillel, and this doesn't show up. That's why Rav Nachman can say this, because he knows that Beit Hillel is not machmir over here. Rav Nachman just doesn't mention it. But Tosa says this is where Rav Nachman gets this from. Continue. Ma'avir and lifnei ha'shulchan peruin. Mesayel le'le Rabbi Yochanan. Damar Rabbi Yochanan peruin she'im ben kizayet asur la'avdan b'yayin. So here you have a big difference between Rashi and Tosas as well. Because Rashi says, how did we read this Gemara? Gemara says that you're allowed, according to, now we know it's Beis Hillel, you're allowed to remove, according to Rabbi Shimon at least, you're allowed to remove these crumbs from the table directly, right? Picking them up and throwing them away. You're allowed to remove them like that. So this is a support for Rabbi Yochanan. Why? Because Rabbi Yochanan says elsewhere that if you have small crumbs, they don't have a kezias, you're not allowed to destroy them. So this supports this Rabbi Yochanan. How does it support this Rabbi Yochanan? So Rashi says on the side, "Midikatani ma'avirin biyadayim velo zariklu." What does Rashi mean? How does he read the Gemara? How do we know from this Gemara that Rabbi Yochanan holds that this is a source for Rabbi Yochanan that says that you're not allowed to throw out small crumbs of food?
Because it uses the word ma'avirin.
Right, because it says
ma'avirin refers to the yadayim only.
Right, it says you're allowed to pick them up and throw them away, but you're not allowed to do it la'abdan biyad. Okay, it's a little bit strange. You're not allowed to throw them. You're allowed to ma'avirin. You're allowed to ma'avir lifnei ha'shulchan. You kind of like
can't destroy them, but you can remove them.
You can push them over onto the floor. Basically, you push them over onto the floor, and that's fine. But you're not allowed to throw them away. Fine, that's how Rashi reads this. Tosos is having none of it, because Tosos points out. He says, "Perish bukuntros mitigatani ma'avirin velokani zorkin." Says, "I don't understand what you're talking about, because the kasha the Rebbe the bereisha namiktani magbin me'al shulchan atzamot v'klipin velokani zorkin." Also in the Reisha it says you ma'avirin me'al shulchan atzamot v'klipin. But does anybody say that you're not allowed to throw out bones? How can you be midayek from the fact that it says ma'avirin? That means you're not allowed to be Zorek. Because that's not true about bones.
Right. Graf Sherei, you can throw away.
Oh. So he says, so Tosot says, that's not what the diok is over here. And also he says, by the way, it says in the Gemara in Brachot, Beit Hillel Amrim, Mishamesh Tamil Chacham, Who Notel Peruin, Sheesh Ben Kazayit, Umaniach Peruin, she'ein ben kazayit, that the shamish is supposed to pick up the ones that are large, and he's supposed to leave the ones that are small. Rabbi Yochanan says the exact opposite in the Gemara Brachot. He says that you're allowed to destroy them. You're allowed to throw them away. So how can Rashi read our Gemara as saying that you're not allowed to do that? So, well, I mean, well, how does Tosos deal with our Gemara? So he says, oh, our Gemara is wrong. E'efshar lagaris hatam aser. You can't say aser over there, but you can say mutter over here. V'nira l'rabbi d'hacha garsinan mutter. He reverses the Gemara. He says, our Gemara says aser, it should say mutter. V'nira l'rabbi d'hacha garsinan mutter v'diach v'di yitzrach l'mitin v'knei shehu machal behema d'haynu mashma d'lo chazi l'adam v'hapu b'shar machal behema v'mutter l'abna. Says, the only reason you're allowed, the Gemara is saying, the fact is that you're allowed to push them off the table over here and throw them away. You're allowed to do that because they're ra'ui l'machal behema. That's what the Gemara is telling you about it. It's not a halacha of mutar abdan bayad or asal abdan bayad. That's a totally separate issue. So here you have a machlokes between Tosos and Rashi about whether or not you're actually allowed to destroy, according to Rav Yochanan, you're allowed to destroy small crumbs.
What's of bread. Sorry, Rabbi. What's the melacha here? The melacha is touching muksa, or the melacha here is destroying something? What's the problem?
The destroying part is nothing to do with Shabbos. It's not melacha. It's a halacha in food, in respect to food.
Okay.
The ma'avirin part, that's about muksa. Okay, continuing. Sear shel afunin. Okay, so these pea pods, or the lentil pods. Mani. I told you before, this is an anonymous part of the Mishnah. So we don't know whether it's Beit Hillel or Beit Shammai, but we are sure it's Rabbi Shimon. Okay? So Simon, this is your bread and butter. Mani, Rabbi Shimoni. The late laying muktzah. This is Rabbi Shimon, because Rabbi Shimon doesn't think that animal food is muktzah. But the problem is, Ema Seifa spoke im yesh lo beit achiz v'mekan chinbo. V'im lav, ein mekan chinbo. But wait a second, the end of the Mishnah says that if it's got a beit achiza, if it's got a handle, then you're allowed to use it. And as Simon pointed out before, what's the reason that you're allowed to use it? Because it's just a davar she'eino mitkaven. It may happen, it may not happen. Sometimes it will happen. You're not intending to squeeze out the sfok. And that's the reason why it's mutter. But the problem is, wait a second. It says that if it's not a beit achiza, if there's no beit achiza, if there's no handle, then you're not allowed to do it. But it's still a davar she'eino mitkaven, isn't it? Even if there's no handle, when you do use the sponge, you don't intend to have water come out of the sponge, correct? So Rabbi Shimon should allow that. It's a davar she'eino mitkaven. Atan Rabbi Yehuda, davar she'eino mitkaven, aser. It sounds like the rest of the Mishnah is being written by Rabbi Yehuda. And the Gemara is bothered. It says, how can this sentence in the Mishnah about the Se'er Shel Afunin be written by Rabbi Shimon, and then the rest of the Mishnah is written by Rabbi Yehuda? How could that be? So the Gemara answers, no, Psik Reisha. Here, Afilo Rabbi Shimon Moda Dabai V'Rabba Dami Shavayo Moda Rabbi Shimon Psik Reisha V'lo Yamot. That over here, when you don't have a handle and you're using the sponge with your hand, it is absolutely 100% going to squeeze out water. And that's the reason why even Rabbi Shimon would be machmer over here for Shechita. Clear? Okay.
By the way, how do we paskin as far as a sponge with a handle on Shabbos?
So we'll get back to that. We'll get to that.
But we should point out, by the way, that Rabbi Huda doesn't hold all animal food to be muktzah. He just holds it to be muktzah if it wasn't prepared before Shabbos to be animal food. That's the problem.
Correct. Which is exactly what we're about to see right now. Hani garinin de tamri armaita, sharulim mitotalinhu. If you have these tamarim, these Aramean dates, okay, which are not very good dates. They're dates that animals can eat them, humans can eat them. They're not very expensive. Rabbi, what's so funny?
Humans can't eat them.
I know there's a crazy sugya in Hilchot Shabbat about two different types of dates. One is for animals and one is for people, right? Yeah. And the pips of the, we're getting to it. I mean, this is where we're going, right? The pips of the dates that are for people or for animals. But the pips of the dates that for animals are not for anybody. I just remember it being like...
Just remember that Robbie and I spent at least a month discussing the different pits of dates.
The hard pits and the hard pits with the soft dates.
And the Duffy only flew over it today in 3 minutes. It was crazy.
My understanding was that over here, these tamarim are edible, but they're generally fed to animals. And therefore, everybody agrees they are allowed to pick up the pit, hol v'chazin agav iman, because their mother, in other words, the mothership of these dates, the dates themselves are animal food. So the entire date structure is fit for animals. So everybody agrees that, like Simon pointed out, you know, from the beginning of Shabbos, both the date and the pit were prepared for animals. However, the parsaita, these Persian dates, asur, shmu metaltelu agav ripta. These Persian dates, because the dates themselves were for humans, that means that the pits are for animals. So you have to be careful, and you're not allowed to carry them. But Shmuel would carry them on top of bread. That's what it sounds like. He would carry them on top of bread.
That's because it's there's two different types of dates here. The first dates, there are Maisa dates a human would never eat. The Dafres Saisa dates only humans would eat. And Correct. Therefore, because you didn't prepare them for animals before Shabbos.
So when you get to the part in the middle, which is the pit, which no human would eat, but because the whole date wasn't prepared for animals, it's now muktzah. It could be that the pit is fit for an animal, but we get rid of it. Who is this? Whose position is this?
That's Rabbi Yehuda.
That seems to be Rabbi Yehuda, right? But the Gemara says, Aser. And then it says, Shmuel metaltelu agav rifta.
That's a way out.
Right, that's a way out that's mentioned in the previous daf, right? The previous daf says that if you want to get out of muktzah, what you can do is you can carry it on top of bread or on top of an infant.
Or a dead baby.
Right? Actually, the previous Gemara says you put a piece of bread on it or a baby on it, is really what it says.
But no, when I read this, I didn't understand that the Persian dates were not fit for animals. I understood that they are better dates and humans eat it, then why give it to an animal if it's such a high quality? I'd rather give the animal the Aramean dates and eat the Persians for myself.
The question is what you designated them for before Shabbos.
Yeah.
Not whether they're fit, because obviously animals can eat caviar. It's just not designated for them.
Correct. Okay, so now the Gemara gets into other positions. Now, it has over here, Shardam Shapas Siman. You guys know what Simanim are. Simanim are mnemonic devices. Before they had written down the Gemara, this is the way that they used to remember this sugya. So, anybody know what Sharnam Shapas stands for?
Shmuel Rav Rav.
Well, you got Shmuel,
Rav, Rav Chuna, Rav Ashi. Rav Chuna, Rav Ashi.
Rav Yehoshua. The second shin is Yehoshua.
I don't think so.
Or maybe it's Rav Ashi. I'm not sure.
It's Rav Ashi.
And then you have...
Papa?
I'm sorry. The second shin is Sheshet. My mistake. The mem, I think, is Amemar. The mem is Amemar. The second shin is Sheshet. Then Papa. And then Zachariah. And Zachariah is going to have a special place for us. So the Gemara says, Shmuel Letame. Why did Shmuel... we just learned that Beis Hillel and Rabbi Shimon say that stuff that was originally prepared for humans but ends up being fit only for animals can be carried on Shabbos. Mutar letaltel. So why is Shmuel being machmir over here and putting this... What's he doing? So Shmuel Letame. Damer Shmuel. Osa Adam kol tzarcho bepat. So first of all, what's Shmuel doing? He is being machmir. But his chumra is, he says, you know, you can fix anything with bread. All right? You can fix anything with bread. Just put some bread on it. It's all mutter. Which reminds me, when I was Shana Aleph in Reshit, I was only ever Shana Aleph. When I was there, I remember one time, two of the Shana Bet guys were learning, and they were learning Hilchas Shabbos. And I don't remember what they were learning. I think they were learning the sugya of maybe of Boner or something, or Sosa. I don't remember. And they were talking about how you're allowed to destroy paper or plastic bags in order to get to the food within. And one of them was saying, oh, why are you allowed to do that? I don't understand. You're not allowed to destroy. And he said, no, it's for food. And the other Shimon Ben guy says, no, it's for food. You're allowed to do anything on Shabbos for food. You're allowed to destroy bags for Shabbos for food on Shabbos. You're allowed to move muksa for food on Shabbos. You're allowed to kill people for food on Shabbos. You're allowed to eat pasuk v'chala for food on Shabbos. Anyways, I'll never forget it. So Shmuel is saying, as long as you have a piece of bread, you can get away with anything. So Oza Adam kol tzarcha b'pat. You just put a piece of bread on it, and you're allowed to move it. Rashi says, mishtamesh bo ve'ein kan mishum bizayon u'memacheu b'tavshil. You're allowed, you don't have to worry about the fact that you're disgracing the bread. Because normally you're not really supposed to use bread for mundane purposes, but here you're allowed to do it. I just point out that bread is a little bit of a red herring, to mix a metaphor, because as the Shulchan Aruch point, or Mishnah Berurah points out, it's anything that's mutter. You're allowed to use anything that's mutter. It's not specifically bread, and it's not specifically an infant. It's just anything that's mutter. By putting it on there, you make it into something that carries both mutter and asur objects. We'll get back to that later.
Even a red herring itself.
What'd you say?
You'd even use a red
herring. You could use a red herring, yeah. But to...
I think your father's British, though, Danny. It's definitely...
Oh, because you guys own sarcasm, right?
What was that?
So dry. I mean, unbelievable. Do you realize your yichus? Unbelievable.
So anyways, so the other... Here are the tricks of the other rabbis. Rabba metaltel lehu agav lakna demaya. He used to carry it on a bucket. Okay, there's a machlokas over here about what exactly that means. Rashi just says safal shalmayim. So the simple meaning seems to be that you would put it inside the bucket. But there are other meanings. We don't want to get into it right now. Ravuna b'edu Rav Yehoshua avidu kegraf shel rei. Oh, so this is a huge topic. Ravuna b'edu Rav Yehoshua. He basically avoided the whole issue. He ignored the whole thing. Why? Because he Rashi says he used to just spit out his shells all into one big pile until the pile was so repulsive that there was no problem. He would just pick it up with his hands and he would throw it away. Why? Because it's what's called a graf shel rei. What's rei, literally?
Excrement.
Yeah, rei is literally feces.
You know, Danny, can I ask Robbie something a second? Robbie, didn't we learn that you're not allowed to make a graf shel rei b'chavana?
Amazing. What a coincidence. Amalei Rav Ashi la'meimer b'chi osin graf shel rei l'chatchila. Next line in the Gemara, Amemar says to Rav Yehoshua, but we learned. Sorry, Rav Ashi says to Amemar. Now, the question is, how did Amemar get in here? So usually we understand that Amemar apparently did the same thing that Rav Huna b'edu Rav Yehoshua did. Or at least he taught about it. And he said, but you're not allowed to make it a graf shel rei. But wait a second. What's a graf shel rei? A graf shel rei is a pile of something repulsive, something disgusting, that you can't stand for it to be there anymore. And in that case, you're allowed to just remove it. So examples of that would be a dirty diaper, a rat, okay? Or apparently a pile of shells that you've already consumed the food, or bones, chicken bones. So the problem over here is that they said, you know, is it so simple that you're allowed to, l'chatchila, make a graf shel rei? Now, it's interesting, the Gemara doesn't have a conclusion to this. They just kind of move on. What would be the problem with making a graf shel rei l'chatchila, by the way? What's the problem?
Very good question.
So I didn't do too much investigation. My guess is that in general, you're not allowed to make muksa things on Shabbos. You're not allowed to mivata kli mehechano, but it's hard to understand it that way because it's already mukta.
Why is it mukta? It's not mukta.
No, that's the wrong answer. The right answer is it's already mukta.
No, it's
the bones are already mukta.
That's the right answer. You're correct. But hold on, you're saying you can say that again. What was your reason why it's not?
I thought maybe because you're allowed to be mivata kli mehechano, but that's not the case over here because here you have an object that's already mukta.
But it's not mukta when you spit it out.
Well,
sure it is. It's not a graph for sure until you pile it up.
If you take a galin and you take it out the pit from inside, you're allowed to drop. It's not muksa until it's dropped out of your hand, because until then, it was almost like a klisha malachta leheta. Something enabled you to eat the fruit. It's the vessel, it was the outside vessel of the nut. It held the nut.
I think it becomes mukta right away.
So then
right after you finish that last piece of meat, that last bit of basar, it's now mukta. It's got no purpose anymore.
But I understand, but you picked it up the heter.
Of course.
So you can put it down wherever you want.
Yeah.
As long as you chop it on the table, you now got a whole lot on the table then.
See, I was inclined to agree with you, Rabbi. I also thought that, you know, once you picked it up a heter, you're allowed to put it down wherever you want. That's generally how we view muksa. But I think that only applies to muklisha melachto le'iser, like lighter forms of muksa. But over here, it could be that this is a more severe form of muksa where you actually have to get rid of it right away, I think. Because over here, it really sounds like they got rid of it right away.
I think it sounds more like en mevater isur lechatchila or something like that, but making a graf shorei lechatchila, it's sort of that sort of general.
So that's what I was thinking, that maybe, that since the Gemara really doesn't have a conclusion over here, it could be that Rav, you know, Lule de Mistafina, I would say that Ravashi is making a mistake over here. Ravashi says, you're not allowed to make a graf shorei. But what does that mean? Maybe you're not allowed to make a graf shorei out of something that's mutter. Like, you're not allowed to take something that's mutter and make it disgusting, because then you're really making it mukta, right? You're taking something and you're being mevato kli mehechanom. But there's no reason to extend that to something that was already mukta. Why should you not be allowed to make that into graf shorei? And maybe that's where Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua disagrees with Ravashi. I didn't see anybody point this out, but
the way I understood it is when you split up the one pip, it's not a graf shorei, it's just mukta.
Right.
It's only become graf shorei when you pile them all up together. Then you lechatchila making a graf shorei in order that you can move it.
Right.
That's the point.
Yeshua seems to think that's okay.
No. Yes, because that's not your intention. There isn't any meleches machshavis to make a graf shorei. He's saying here, oh, you do a graf shorei lechatchila? No, I just spat out my pips.
It's a graf shorei. What does Ravashi think then, Simon?
You're right. He's saying, how can you possibly make a graf shorei lechatchila? He has a problem with that. But I think the answer to him is, no, I didn't make a graf shorei lechatchila so that I'd be able to move it. I just spat out my pips.
Well, yeah, but the fact is that the Gemara makes it sound like Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua was doing this on purpose. Yes. He was doing this on purpose. He was piling them up. Dad, I have a distinct memory of you using the nutcracker and having like a pile of leftover shells. Was this what you were doing? Just say yes.
Yes. I'm not sure what you're talking about, but I'll say yes.
All right. So then the last part is...
I think, by the way, there's a difference between nutshells,
yeah,
right, and pips. I think pips are far
disgusting,
more...
disgusting, you mean?
Yeah, pips are far more disgusting. I mean, think about it. If you're sitting around the Shabbos table, right, with guests and your wife, and there's some shells of nuts... That's still okay. If you're sitting and there's a big pile of gobby pips from dates, or both. I think there's a difference.
I think it's a cultural difference. I think you're right. I think we agree with you. But it's a culture. But we were talking before about like graf shorei is like a rat or excrement. I don't think you could...
No, this could be. I mean, I could say you're sitting at the Shabbos table and your wife would say, listen, just get that pile of
gobby. Yeah, it's disgusting.
Whereas if it's nutshells, then...
I think there is a difference between, say, walnut shells, which I crack, and the shells have not been in my mouth, as opposed to perhaps sunflower seeds, garinim, which may have gone into my mouth and I spit out the shells, or watermelons where I spit out the seeds. Yeah. I think there's a qualitative difference between them.
I don't think anybody in England eats the garinim and spits them out. I don't think. Joe, have you ever seen anybody having garinim in England? No.
What would be the difference though, if you spread them out and scattered them across the table as opposed to putting them into...
You don't spit them out, Mike.
I'm saying, what's the difference if you scatter them around as opposed to creating... Why is it? Is it much worse if they're in a pile?
No, only if they're in a pile do they turn into a graf shorei.
Yeah, then what's the issue?
Yeah,
Rashi says that. It's over in the fun of Kishocha. It's over in the fun of. He collected them in front of himself.
It's a good question.
Until it became disgusting. I mean, you can imagine, you have these, you know, a whole thing of wet date palm, the date...
There's a big difference between the outer shell of a of like these garinim that people have and the pip of a date. Because the pip of a date has generally been in your mouth. That's pretty disgusting. Even two of them is already a graf shiri.
Okay, I mean, I guess it depends how you eat the garinim, because, you know, as you mentioned before, most people eat garinim in their mouth and then spit it out.
No, they don't. They take it here, go like this, then they kind of they take the middle bit into their mouth, vazel. They don't. You don't put the whole thing in your mouth.
Yes,
you need to buy the right garinim, Rav Danny.
Simon, I've sat with Israelis, Russians, Arabs, and Americans, and
they put the whole thing in their mouths.
Sounds like
a Simon, you've never been to an American baseball game where you watch the baseball players eating their sunflower seeds during the game.
Yeah.
Clearly, I haven't lived.
They'll throw a whole bag of sunflower seeds in their mouth and never mind. Fill in the blanks.
Let's finish the bottom of the Gemara. So Rav Sheshet had a different way. He, Zarek Lehu Belishna, he used to spit them out. So he used to spit out the seeds of whatever it is that he was eating. He used to spit them out, and then he didn't touch them at all with his hands. Right? Al Eivra Shulchan, he spit them out all the way till the end. Rav Papa, Zarek Lehu Achare Amita. Rav Papa, he used to hide them. Right? So he, you know, while his wife wasn't looking, he used to take them out of his mouth, and he would throw them behind the bed. Amru Alav, Al Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulas, Shayam Achzir Panav Achare Amita, Lizorka. Zachariah ben Avkulas, he used to turn around and he would throw them. Truthfully, it sounds like he would throw them with his hand. Although, it's interesting, the art scroll actually says that he threw them out with his mouth, that he spit them out.
Yeah, he did. I think they used
to. What do you mean he did?
In those days.
What do you mean he did? The Gemara says Zorka.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that he would throw it. Throw it is a lotion of spitting, I think, and not a lotion. He would throw them out by spitting.
How do you know? Rav Sheshet, it specifically says, Zarek Lehu Belishne. Specifically says Belishne. Rav Papa just says, Zarek Lehu Achari Amita. Does that mean with his mouth? It doesn't say with his mouth. Over here, when it said Zorkin over here, it was definitely with your hands, because you were picking it up from this table and throwing them.
Right, but I think the intention here is they used to lie. They didn't used to lie on their beds. They used to lie on chaise longues, which were like a couch with this part like this. They used to lean to their right so they wouldn't choke, and they had a little table in front of them.
Yeah,
and with a puke bucket just to the left. And if he spat the pips behind the bed.
Hafuch, I would think that it sounds like what Zarachiah ben Avkilas would do is he would take it out with his hands, and then he would turn around and he would throw it behind the bed. That's what it sounds like to me. Because it says Zarkan, it doesn't say Zarkan Bepeh. It doesn't say Belishne.
Let me ask the rabbi.
I know what the art school says. I think it's wrong.
What does it say?
I think it's wrong. The art school specifically says that he, in the footnote on the bottom, it says, that is, he would toss them there with his tongue. Okay, it quotes Rishonim, it quotes the Meiri. Maybe the Meiri says, I didn't look it up.
Have you heard of Merkava, Rav Dani?
What?
Have you heard of Merkava?
No, what's Merkava?
Merkava is an amazing website, which also has, the Gemara with a translation, and it tells you also what's going on, the Shakla and Taria. I will send you now the translation that it says here. Have a look on the chat. And throw them there by spitting.
Okay. They're allowed to translate however they want. I'm just pointing out that the Gemara doesn't say that, and I know someone else who doesn't say it, and you guys will see soon. I'm not alone. You'll see soon. Okay. If we have time. All right. Let's dive into the sources. Let's see some things a little bit more in depth. So first of all, there's the Muktzah issue. There's three issues that I want to deal with over here. I call them Muktzah Magvonim and Tisha B'Av. So we have the Muktzah issue. How do we deal with the fact that these people are moving things? I'll make it bigger, yeah. How do we deal with the fact that these people are moving things that are Muktzah, moving things on a muktzah just by putting things on top of them, right? We saw that Shmuel said, I just put a piece of bread on top of it and then everything is fine. So let's see if we understand this. So the Ritva, and there's a whole school of Rishonim like this, the Ritva, the Rashba, the Ramban, they all have the same issue. Says, first of all, how are you allowed to move the table? The Mishnah says that according to Rabbi Huda, let's say, you're allowed to move the table in order to tilt it, right? The cave and the cane, So I don't understand. It becomes basically a basis ladavar asur. So the first answer is, he says, "Kevan de bederach achilot hinecham sham, ukedel esalkam la'alder b'emtzah shabbat ein zanikar basis." He says this is a special din with regards to food, because he put them there in order to eat. So obviously he was going to end up having some zevel afterwards, some garbage on the table. So the table doesn't become a basis. So fine. V'im tomer mikol makom lahabi kishochech v'he asur l'salekat tavla elishiyon arenu v'yiklu ha'atzamot v'achlipin. So fine. At the very least, it becomes a shochech, and now you have something muksa on top of this tavla. And so, according to everybody, the only option you should have is to tilt it over. So he says v'yesh lomer da'acham yistomer kishatzarich limkoma askinan. It says it must be that over here, we're talking about where you need the spot on the table that is occupied by these garinim. Okay, by the garinim or by the perurim or by whatever leftover food is on the table. You need the spot. You know, you're going to have guests tomorrow. You need to clear the table. Because you need the spot, you're allowed to move it by itself. How come this isn't mentioned before? Okay, you know, let's skip this part. He's asking a separate question. Now let's get to his new question. Earlier in the Masechta, on Mem Dalet Amud Bet, it says that you're allowed to tilt the pillow, and then the money falls off the pillow. That's what you should do. But in Parakira, it says, that if you have a mita, you have a bed that wasn't set aside for the ma'ot, you're not allowed to move it. In other words, he says, on the Gemara Mem Dalet, it says, you're not even allowed to tilt it. You're not even allowed to tilt it to get the muktzah off. So how are we allowed to tilt this table? Based on the Gemara in Mem Dalet, how are you allowed to tilt this table? So he has three answers. Number one, he quotes the Ravid. The Ravid says, "Shani mita shemitoch shiasuya lahaniach alei ma'od afilu b'lo yichud v'afilu b'shocheach." It becomes a basis because this is a normal thing for the mita that it's a place where you store this money. So even if you did it by accident, it becomes a basis and the bed becomes batel to the money because it's a place where you store it. It says, but it's different over here where garinin beteli legabe tavla, she'en hanachasham ela arai. Because nobody uses the table to store garinin. The only reason the garinin are there are because you put food on the table and the leftover after the food is done is the garinin. But the table is not set aside to hold garinin. That's how the Ravid answers this question. So the table doesn't become a basis because the garinim are basically batel to the table. But the Ravid doesn't like it. Ein de b'chuvar, he doesn't like this answer. He says it's too subjective. So he gives another answer. Yesh shetirtu dahatem kshayu sham kol bein hashmashot. He says, or maybe it was where the money was there bein hashmashot, but he says, but it doesn't sound like it over there, so that's why he doesn't like this answer. Fine. But he says, what's the right answer? Anachon dehatam lo nachit rav lemeida kulehai v'lo nitkaven lomar ela sheini sura ela v'odam alav keven shalo yichta lekachu lafuki mereisha v'asur letaltala dekamar hainu kedina shim natan ledat asur legamre v'afilu b'neir v'afilu letzorach mekoma v'im shochech mutar lenara o lesalka letzorach mekoma. He says, we have to reread the Gemara over there on Mem Dalet, and really the Gemara over there on Mem Dalet is when you actually put it there on purpose. You put the money there on purpose, and not when you just simply forgot it there. And over here, the garinim were placed there after the fact. They weren't put there on purpose. So this is all by way of explaining why the table does not become a basis ledavar asur, in which case you wouldn't be allowed to tilt it.
Might we also say that the table is also a basis ledavar mutar? So it's for mutar and asur, and that's our out.
Yeah, you could say that, and that would be the purpose of putting something mutar on the table in order to be able to move it afterwards. Yeah. The Rashba picks up a little bit later on. He picks up not in the Mishnah, but actually with Shmuel, and he says, everybody agrees they're allowed to move it with the bread. But he says, but wait a second. How are you allowed to do this by putting the muktzah stuff on top of the bread? Then the bread becomes a basis of davar asur. How did you get out of the problem? So he says, no, you misunderstood. So what's the Rashba saying over here? He's saying it doesn't become a basis. The kol, what's he saying again? I forget. Shekol atzmo eino osakein ela lezarkan. Okay. Because the only reason you're putting it on the bread is in order to throw it out. So it doesn't become a basis of davar asur, because the whole point of it is to throw it out. You're using it as a device. Okay, hold on. There was another answer that I wanted to get to. Let me just see if I can find it.
I don't understand that answer.
What?
I don't understand that answer. Just because you're using it as a device to throw it out, why does that stop the bread from becoming a basis?
Apparently, it only becomes a basis if your intent is just to put it on it in order to store it there, or to, you know, for it to be holding that object. Even if you do that by accident, but if you on purpose, if you basically are designating this piece of bread to carry the muktzah, then it's okay.
But if I designate a tray to carry my Shabbos candles, it still becomes a basis to the candles when they go out. I can't move it.
But then when you put a piece of bread on, it's okay, right? Because there, it's hard to say that you're designating the tray merely in order to be able to move the candles. You're really designating the tray to hold the candles.
That's the definition of buses. The buses is the thing that the muktzah thing is on. Even if you designate it to move it, it doesn't help you.
I think bread's okay for Sfaradim, and I think it's okay for Ashkenazim. I'm being serious. I think Shulchan Aruch allows you to put the bread on, because then it's a process of the Davar Mutar also. But I think the Ashkenazim and Machmer, I can't remember.
No, but that's what we do. We're not putting bread on the bread. We're putting the muktzah item on the bread. The bread is the base.
Right, no, that's the case we're talking about here.
Yeah, but you're talking about Shabbos candlesticks.
Right.
You put the bread on the tray.
Rob is asking why you can't designate the tray to perform the same function as the bread. Why can't you just say the tray is there to carry the candlesticks? I guess the answer is because that's not true. The tray is there in order to hold the candlesticks. You've got a fancy tray for the candlesticks. Or maybe it's because it's there on Erev Shabbos. Maybe that's the reason. Oh yeah, that's the reason. Here, look, Rabbi, take a look. Bim Tomer, v'ha aminu b'perakima b'mita shalo yichta l'maot yesh ala maot asur l'tatala yishlamer d'ha'u b'shahiwa la b'nesh mashot, because you can't do that b'nesh mashot. V'inami b'miniach l'dat b'emta shabbat ayidei goyotin. Okay, that's something else. But there was something else I was looking for. Here, let's see if this is it. Yishlamer d'ata b'metatala zorach gufa b'lo nior u'b'sheinu tzarech l'tomah v'ha b'tzarech l'tomah. I think this is because you're combining the fact that you're using the bread, and anyways, you're really only trying to clear up the space where the bones are. Okay, let's jump past this a little bit, and I wanted to just point out that, as we said, there's a machlokin Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon over here. According to Rabbi Shimon, there's no problem at all. And the Rush points this out. Technically speaking, you're allowed to move this lechatchila. You're allowed to move all this stuff. There's no problem.
He says Adam Chashuv is supposed to be machmer on himself.
It seems that nowadays this is the practice of everybody. We're all machmer for Rabbi Yehuda. We're all the halachas of Rabbi Yehuda. We're all machmer that way. That's how it's recorded in the Shulchan Aruch. That's what we all do. Which is a pretty amazing thing when you think about it, that we're all machmer to be an Adam Chashuv for Mukta, which is Mukta is only Durabanan. Why do we have to all treat it like it's Hanukkah candles, right? We don't have many things that we all treat ourselves as an Adam Chashuv. Okay, be that as it may, here's the straight up Shulchan Aruch. Okay, there's a lot to do over here, so I'm going to run through it quickly. It says, the Shulchan Aruch says, Yesh matirim letaltel kli shemalachta l'Israel filu micham letel al yedei kikar o tinok. You're allowed to move something that's malachto le'iser using a piece of bread or a baby. I just love this. You know, you're going to use a baby like this. It's just amazing. Anyways, the Mishnah Berurah argues, and he says, wait a second, though. Lav davka kikaru, hu adin im natan shar chafet, amutar betocha. This is what I was telling you about before. It's not davka, a piece of bread. It could be anything. But he says, v'nei de'azu, Hidata rush. This is the rush. Aval haber merishonim chalkin azeh. The sriel edeloiti ukikar vitinok elalameit bilvad. They say this is only a heter. This is only a good trick for moving a dead body, which needs to be moved for its dignity. In other words, to move it out of a room because it's smelly or because you want to get into a designated spot. So you're allowed to put a piece of bread or a baby on a dead body in order to be able to move it.
That's
because it's you're moving it because you want to move the dead body.
You're
thinking about tzar could be
we're talking about where it's not letzorch makomo or letzorch gufo.
Ah, okay.
Because it's mechama letzel. It's for the sake of the object itself.
Right. Okay.
So this is being super makel. In other words, the Rush says you're allowed to be super makel. You're allowed to take a piece of bread and move anything you want for any reason that you want. But the Shabura says not so fast. That's the Rush, but not everybody agrees with that. Most Shitos say that the only thing you're allowed to move for this purpose is a dead body. Avalo b'shar davar mukta. Av shehu kli. V'chein yichvir haver achronim, and they all agreed with this. Because says this is all talking about if you okay, let's leave this aside for a second. So that's how far the bread device can be used. In other words, not very far. You can only use it for moving something, letzarach gufo letzarach makomo, it seems. Or for another reason, but not for a kamal itself. But then the Shulchan Aruch over here, this is our halacha. So bones that are left over on the table. You can move them straight up. But if they're not even ready for machal behema, those are really mukta, and you're not allowed to move them. You have to tilt the table. But if there's bread, so in that case, you're allowed to move aside all these pieces of flotsam and jetsam. You're allowed to get them off the table using bread. That's where you really can use this trick. Everyone agrees you can use this trick. However, if you need the actual spot, then you don't need the bread at all. You don't need any trick. You can actually pick the garbage up and move it. Okay. Now the Mishnah Berurah comments, he says, what are we talking about when we're talking about picking up the table and tilting it? He says, this is a daf hamunach al shulchan kidei lasum alei alechem. But then he says the big line, v'hu adin mapah prusa. See, our challenge is translating all this into modern day, because basically no one is careful about this stuff nowadays. Almost no one is careful about the leftovers on their Shabbos table. Everybody does whatever they want. Am I right or am I wrong? I'm pretty much right, I think. So how do we justify everything? So the easiest way to get around all this, which not everybody does, but some people certainly do, is if you happen to have a plastic tablecloth on your table, then you can absolutely just wrap up the plastic tablecloth and throw that away. And that's one way of getting rid of everything. Problem is, most people don't do this between meals on Shabbos. Most people, you know, remove the things that are on the table on Friday night directly, and they leave the tablecloth over for Shabbos afternoon. But if you happen to just pick up the plastic tablecloth on Friday night and throw that away and put on a new plastic tablecloth on Shabbos afternoon, you're done. That's perfect. The reason this is okay is because it's not metatel v'yadayim. Fine. V'hu adinim aviram ha'idei davar acher, kegon shehu megarer otam ha'idei sakin min ha'mapa. You can use some kind of knife or something like that, or as long as you do something that's not with your hand. The Mishnah Berurah requires that if you're going to be clearing up the space, you still should do it, which means that you're using another object, not your hand.
You have the same problem with the food plates. Somebody has a pulka, they've got a bone left on their plate. You don't pick up the bone, pick up the plate.
Right. The problem is, what if the plate is only garbage?
It's a graf sherei. You're not going to leave it on the table for the whole of Shabbos.
Oh, okay, good. Okay. Ukedelakam b'semen shenir alav samachet. V'im nibkabzu har b'yachad u'ma'us alav l'hanichan kach al shulchan. This, I believe, is the strongest heter for what we do nowadays. Nobody's okay with having garbage on their table. Just nobody's okay with it. Doesn't really matter even what kind of garbage. It's gross. You know, you don't want to leave the stuff on the table. Even I would say that even a cup that has leftover juice in it, whatever, even that people are not comfortable just leaving that out on the table. Now, it's true that it would be a stretch normally to say that it's a graf shorei, right? So it's a good thing that I'm not the only one who says it.
I think there's something else here also, and that is, because of the way we live today, it's very rare we have stuff on the table that is pure garbage. I mean, generally, right. When we clear things up, there's generally a little bit of food left on it. And because we live the way we do, we chuck it out as well. We don't suck the bone until there's actually nothing left on it.
Very good point. Very good point. Excellent point. That is true. If what's left on your table is a little bit of leftover cholent, and, you know, a couple of leaves from the salad, and, you know, a little, you know, the little bits of schnitzel breadcrumbs that got left over, all that stuff is food. That's food. That's not mukta. That stuff is all legitimate food. Mukta is, you know, completely picked clean bones, maybe chicken skin, maybe, because I don't know whether some people like to eat that, but, you know, stuff that's completely left with no edible pieces to it. So, Robbie, that's an excellent point. But even besides for that, I saw in the Dirshu Mishnah Berurah, they quote the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish actually disagrees with the Mishnah Berurah. He doesn't think that using a knife is good enough. He thinks a knife is just an extension of your hand, so he doesn't think that's good enough. But nevertheless, he does say elsewhere, they quote the Chazon Ish as saying that you're allowed to remove garbage using a napkin. And Rav Chaim Kanievsky says that, and many others say, that the minhag is to get rid of everything because of a combination of factors, including graf shorei, and other factors. So the minhag is that people do get rid of it. The problem is what to do with the garbage once it's in the garbage can. Because that also people do whatever they want with. But if you look in many of the Kitzur Sfarim, they say it's a problem to get rid of garbage in the garbage can. But generally people are mako, probably also because of graf shorei. If you need to put more garbage in and the garbage is full, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to make another bag and put it outside the garbage can. That's gross. Better to remove the garbage from the house completely. So that's, you know, that seems to be the minhag halacha.
Without tying the bag.
Well, you can do a single tie. You just can't do a double tie. Do a single tie to make sure it doesn't explode.
It doesn't answer the question of do we do a graf shorei lechatchila. And it would seem that we're making a graf shorei lechatchila here.
No, we're not making a graf shorei lechatchila over here. You're just eating and then putting down. You got to put it somewhere.
And you clear the table and you fill the rubbish bin full of zevel, and you know that you're going to have to throw it out.
That's not the chatchila. You have to put the garbage somewhere.
Throw it out the window. You're putting it in the rubbish bin.
Yeah, because that's the normal place to put it.
That doesn't
and
mean
anyways,
it's okay.
the garbage was a graf shel rei to begin with.
Then why do you need to throw it out before?
What do you mean?
You're making a graf shel rei lechatchila. You're creating a graf shel rei lechatchila.
No, the whole
you
garbage
the stuff was already a graf shel rei. It was just a small one, and you put them all together. But I think nobody's going to throw out a pulka in the tray in the sink. But if you have a whole bag full of rubbish from a whole meal, then somebody will throw it out. Look, I think a graf shel rei should be thrown out. I'm just pointing out the fact that in the Gemara, we said, or we, I think it was Rav Shmuel, said you shouldn't make a graf shel rei lechatchila.
I think what he was saying though over there was that if he had eaten the dates and then, you know, maybe spit them out into the garbage one by one, then that was a normal way to do it. But over here, he purposely was making a pile on his table
okay.
so that in the end, he'd be able to throw that away. I think
okay.
that's what it means.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, let's run to the Makbonim for a quick second. So the Makbonim, what's the story with Schita over here? So first of all, you have a Machlokas, we've shown him here, between Rashi, the Rambam, versus the Raivin, which is what I stalled Simon on before. So the Rambam agrees with Rashi. The Rambam says, when you squeeze out a piece of clothing from liquid, that's kibus. And then here's the line, the purpose of the handle is to prevent you from doing schita. The Ravid says, oh, Hatzar Fatim Mefarshim Ken, which is pretty remarkable. He says, yeah, you know, the French, they say like the Rambam. Okay, very nice. Vikashali, Kiyesh lo Beit Achiza may have, he doesn't think that it makes a difference. What does the Beit Achiza do? He efshalik noach balos chita. He says, I don't care how long the handle is. There's no way that you can clean with a sponge without it squeezing it out. So he doesn't like it. So he explains it differently. He says, Ani Omar Kevin, Sheish lo Beit Achiza. The Rebbe says something remarkable. He says, when there's a handle, it turns the actual svog, the sponge, into a pail, into a bucket. It stops being a sponge, and it starts being just a kli that holds water. And so when you hold it by the handle and you clean with it, you're just pouring water out of a bucket. That's what the Ravid says. Kind of hard to conceptualize, but that's his way of fixing the problem of what he considers to be a psik resha even with the handle. Now, how do we paskin? So with regards to this issue, unsurprisingly, we paskin like the Rambam and like Rashi. Svogen mekanchen bo elein kin yesh bo tachisa. Gzeira Shema Yischot. The Shulchan Aruch says explicitly like Rambam. The Mishnah Berurah points out, Rashi by Rambam perishes the Ksheish the Or Beit Achiza Kshiyam Sainabo Evshel Lekaneach B'li Shchita. But the Ravid disagrees, which means according to the Ravid, by the way, we would be very makel, because we wouldn't even care if there's any chance of it happening with the Beit Achiza. The Kshiyam Sheish the Beit Achiza Havle Ketzulchim Menei Mayim Shemerik Menei Mayim, but we don't pass like the Ravid. Now, I just want to bring this up just as a side point. Rav Rimon has been publishing, just like Rav Schechter in America, Rav Rimon, oh, everybody's been doing this. Rav Rimon has been publishing Corona Psakim, and one of the Psakim that he published was whether or not you're allowed to use Magvonim on Shabbat for the purposes of Chitui, of being hygienic. And he has a long tshuva. I'm not going to go through the whole back and forth. But he ends up saying, "L'maaseh mistaber shegam chelak gadol min haposkim shasru hayu matirim imayu roim et hamagvonim kayom." He says, "The magvonim that we have, you know, the yellow wipes, the wipes that we use nowadays, the not the yellow ones, but the ones that are
Huggies,
hypoallergenic, they're really, really wet, really, really wet." He says, "Shevedarach klal lo nischat mehem nozel pnimi. When you use them, at least on the first wipe, the liquid that you're getting is on the outer part of the magvon. Vafim nischat in batzorach klau. Even if you were to squeeze it, you wouldn't even need to squeeze it because it's so wet that you don't need to squeeze them. Vaf mandifim be'adro, you don't even want to squeeze them because that would get too much out at once. Nobody, you know, you don't want to squeeze it. You want to kind of slowly get it out. And he says, in fact, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was matir like this. And he says, Rav Asher Weiss, I have the tshuva. Rav Asher Weiss, completely irrespective of coronavirus, he wrote this tshuva about 5 years ago. He wrote a tshuva saying you're allowed to use wipes on Shabbos both for babies and in general, even for cleaning surfaces. You're allowed to use wipes on Shabbos, which not everybody agrees with, but that's what Rav Asher Weiss wrote. He says,
yeah, because you have to use the menachas.
Rav Asher Weiss doesn't say that. But Rav Rimon says that. Nira Eker Ledina Shemoto Lishtamish Meshabbat Moganim Lachim Mitzil Shachitu Bekarona Ach Yesh Lenagayev Benachat. He says it's better to do it Benachat. Ein Inyan Lishtamish Davka Moganim Kimati Veshim. You don't even have to try to go find dry ones. Rather, it's better to find the wetter ones. The wetter, the better. Okay. So that's what he says over here. Just, I wanted to bring that up. Okay. Now, I wanted to end with our connection to Tisha B'Av. So guys, you tell me, what's the connection to Tisha B'Av? Let's see. Those who were in the Daf Yomi Shir this morning, what did the Rebbe say?
Simon, go for it.
No, I want to hear.
Okay, Rav Joe, you were listening. I was playing on my computer this time.
Well, the last part of the Gemara quotes Zechariah ben
Avkulas.
Avkulas, who happened to be at the Suda, the famous Suda regarding Kamsa and Bar Kamsa.
I'm not aware that he was at the Suda. That's not what the Gemara says.
He quoted the Chasam Sofer on a Gemara in Masechet Nida.
Yeah.
Not Gittin?
Not Gittin. I'm sorry, Gittin, yes.
So I have to look it up again because Zechariah ben Avkulas does show up in the story of Kamsa bar Kamsa, but I think it's later on. We'll see now in a second. So first of all, we have to see that there's a Tosefta. The Tosefta says there's a machloket between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, Mavir me'al shulchan misalik et tavla, etc., etc. And the end of the Tosefta says Zechariah ben Avkulas, who is a Tana, lo ya noeg lo kedivrei Beit Shammai ve'lo kedivrei Beit Hillel, elanotel umashlich la'achar hamita. He used to throw it behind the mitah. Amar Rabbi Yossi, an vatnuto shel Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas, sarfat eichal. Okay, this is very strange. The end of that Tosafta says, the humility, the anava of Zechariah ben Avkulas burned the heichal. What? What does it have to do with anything? No? What does it have to do with anything? What does one have to do with another? So, the sefer Daf al Daf, it quotes the Gra. Well, it quotes first of all the Gaon HaKadosh Me'atz from the Meir Einei Chachamim, the sefer Meir Einei Chachamim. But this is a teaching that they say in the name of the Gra. It says the Gra points out that the Gemara in Gittin, which contains the whole story of Kamsa bar Kamsa. At the end of that, at the end of the story, what happens? Bar Kamsa arranges with the emperor that the emperor of Rome should send a calf to the Jews to be shechted in the Beit HaMikdash. And he says, if the Jews refuse to shecht this calf, then you know that they're rebelling against you. Now, how did Bar Kamsa get the Jews to refuse to shecht this calf on behalf of the emperor? He made a little bit of a mum, either in the mouth, Or in the eye of the calf. Machlok is which one he did. And what happened? They brought it to the Beit HaMikdash, and very quickly they noticed that there was, let's say it's in the mouth, they noticed that there was a mum in the mouth of this calf, and they said, we're not allowed to bring this as a korban. It has a mum. But the rabbis conferred, and they said, but wait a second, if we don't do this, then the Romans are going to get really mad. They knew what Bar Kamsa was doing. So they said, what should we do? And they couldn't figure out what to do. So they said, maybe we should just kill Bar Kamsa. Those are our two options. We can, in order to save everybody, we can either bring this as a korban or we can kill Bar Kamsa. So what ended up happening? Lo hiskim Rav Zachar ben Avkilos. He would not agree to do either one. Mishum shema yomra matel mum bakachim yareg. If they kill Bar Kamsa, then people are going to say, oh, if you're matel mum bakachim, then you get the death penalty, which is not true. That's what people, he was concerned that that's what people were going to say. And over there, the Gemara says this line. So over there, it seems pretty clear that it's blaming the destruction of the Beit Hamikdash on Zachariah ben Avkilos. The question is, why does it attribute it to his humility, to his anava? And the Gra asks this question. He says, why does it attribute to his anava? So what did the Gra say? He explained. He said, what happened? It wasn't Rav Zachariah ben Avkilos' psak that was the problem. He's entitled to his psak. He's entitled to his position. And nobody's going to criticize him for taking that position. Why do they criticize him? Because of the protocol. What's the protocol for Dini Nefashos? The protocol for Dini Nefashos, when you have a case that has lives at stake, is that you need to go Me'akatan El Hagadol. When you survey the Sanhedrin, you have to go from the youngest person or the least senior person to the oldest person. Why do you want to do that? Why do you want to go from the youngest person first?
So they then get influenced by what the older people say.
Because if you start from the Nasi, then everybody's going to feel compelled to bask in the same as the Nasi. But if you start with the interns first, then they'll say what they mean. And then as you move your way up, Then everybody else will say what they mean. But what was the problem with the Zachariah ben Avkilos? Even though he was the Gadol b'Sanhedrin, he was the greatest, he didn't think he was the greatest. He thought he was the lowest. So what did he do?
He went first.
He went first. And once he went first, everybody else, they all knew that he was the greatest. So what did they do?
They followed along.
They followed him. They agreed with him. He inadvertently manipulated the vote. The Gemara seems to be assuming that the majority vote was going to go against Zachariah ben Avkilos. Most people did not agree with him. But once he passed in that way, everybody passed in that way. That's how the Gemara understands the story. Why is this relevant? Why is this relevant to our Gemara? So let's continue. So over here, Lefiza, Bir Agon of Hakadosh Me'az Chumtza et Atosefta. Why? Why did Abaye put bread on top of, or carry the garinim on top of the bread? Why did he do that?
The garinim.
But why? The halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, the muktzah mutter. The halacha is not like that. Mipnei shekevan shayu anashim chashuvim shebador hichmiru al atzman shelo letaltel. Because they were being machmir, because they were anashim chashuvim. That's why they were doing this. Like Tosas explains, Shmuel shekat with the Adam chashuv yachal lehachmir alatzma b'mukta after halachik Rabbi Shimon the mukta shari. Shmuel says that you're supposed to be machmir if you're an Adam chashuv. V'im kein, mizesh Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkilos hayanot al atzamos u'mashlich le'achar amita ki Rabbi Shimon the shari mukta. Simon, this is how I know that he did it with his hands. Because if he was doing it with his mouth, then there's no story. He was spitting the garin in. He didn't do anything that was mukta. But what did he do? He did mukta. He put it onto his hand, and then he threw it behind the bed. But is he allowed to do that? Technically speaking, he's allowed to do that.
Yeah.
Not in his hands of chashuv.
But it was about his aniva.
This was an indication that Zachariah ben Avkilos did not consider himself an Adam Chashuv, which was the root of the sort of what ultimately led to the destruction of the Beit Hamikdash.
Fair.
Now, just to make this, to make this a little bit more matim, the Maritz Chiyot, one of the great rabbis of Prague. So he just points out over here. He says the simple understanding of the Gemara is mipnei godol an batnuto shor zachar ben Avkilos lo hirhiv benafsho oz lasot baza halacha lemaisa. The real reason that Zachariah ben Avkilos was too wary and too, I don't know what the right word is, he was afraid to paskin that they should kill Bar Kamsa, was because he was afraid that people would say that he made mistakes. That's what he was afraid of. And also, he says, because he thought that this kind of halakha should be given over to the Gadol HaDor. Now, the point was over here that he was the Gadol HaDor, but he didn't consider himself a Gadol HaDor. And because he didn't consider himself a Gadol HaDor, that's why he didn't want to paskin straight up that they should kill Bar Kamsa, even though that was the right thing to do. That's our connection to Tisha B'Av. Ultimately, if I were to, you know, to stretch this out a little bit, the message over here is that ultimately the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed because people in positions of leadership didn't realize their responsibilities and didn't realize that they had that there's a reason why they were in that position, and that other people are looking up to them and they need to take that responsibility, take the decisions in their hands, and make the difficult decisions when it's necessary.
All right.
Shkoyach. That's a lesson for the leadership of today as well. Shkoyach.
Certainly.